Screw it. Here we go.
I don't know. Yeah, my question is like, I ask God, like, why did you pick me for Bitcoin? Like, what am I doing with this Bitcoin? And I'm getting the feeling that where we're going with this reversal is like, oh, this is why I have Bitcoin.
Something to think about.
That is the greatest tease ever.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
Welcome back to High Hash Rate. Before we get started, we wanted to remind you that we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. The Bitbox O2 is a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet, and in my opinion, it's got the best user experience in the industry. As always, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE. You get 5% off your purchase. Or you can go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE, no spaces. And you can find that in the show notes. Remember, Bitbox has great customer support. And if you DM me on Twitter or Noster, I am always available to answer your questions about self-custody. And now UTXO management. So there we go. Bitbox. Check them out. Tonight, we're doing, this is this the third attempt to do the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast, the mashup. The last two times Business Cat's Starlink gave out, and it kind of ruined the recording.
Well, I can blame it on the internet. I think it was actually my laptop that was the problem. So I'm recording on a different device this time. So fingers crossed.
His old laptop had Windows Millennium Edition on it. If you guys remember how great that one was,
it's a MacBook Adorable. Did you guys ever run into the MacBook Adorable?
No, I don't think I've ever heard of that.
So it's a MacBook Adorable?
That's not the real name for it. It's okay. Like a netbook. It's a Mac netbook. In 2016, 2017, Mac made like a little tiny netbook. It's like an 11-inch little laptop, and it's awesome. It's an amazing little machine, but it's so underpowered. But I mean, it's like, okay, for running Logic to do editing, okay, it can run Logic, but I mean, it's using a, like, literally it's an iPhone CPU chip, like the all-in-one chip, running macOS on a 27. Yeah, so that's my best guess of why I kept dropping those packets.
But you guys got Business Cat by himself with no problem. You got me by myself with no problem. We got all of us together twice now, big problems.
Yeah, right. How does this happen? Like, you and I recorded how many episodes with that laptop? No problems.
Well, I think the first times were with Zoom. And I think only maybe we tried once or only, I don't know. But River, now we use a different software. So I don't know. That might be part of the reason why.
This time's going
to
work.
I think we'll see. Just we had to, the signal was too much.
Right. And... right. Oh, yeah. Let's
call it that. Yeah. Let's call it that.
It took a couple of attempts. I think this time we actually got it. I'm really
no,
I
to
was
address
so
your,
psyched. So
to,
psyched.
To address
for
your suspicion, we did not can the first one because you were too spicy.
That's I did have that suspicion.
I know you did. I know you, and I've heard you talk about it. But that's not why. And it's all in the second one. In the second one, you kind of mentioned maybe there was you like too much signal or something. But we had this conversation with Cedric Yongelman. We interviewed him a few weeks ago, and we had the same. We didn't actually do recordings and lose them, but we just kept missing scheduled recordings. And he said, you know, when it finally comes together, that it's usually going to be a banger of an episode. Like, it's like the right time for it to happen. So that's how I feel about this one. This is going to be a banger.
I totally feel it.
I'm into it.
You guys will have to convince me of that.
We'll
have to see.
I make no promises. I've been up dealing with my children's been puking all day. Yeah,
well,
sorry.
The last one we recorded had some really interesting touch points, but I can't recall any of them. Of course,
it must have been real interesting. It happens.
That's all right. I mean, if none of us remember the content, we can have all the same like conversations over again, and no one will ever know.
That's true.
You might actually have the same exact conversation.
I never, ever, ever repeat myself ever.
So shall we begin? As in the last one, as we started, Fundamentals went through every single Phish album and every single live show. We went through event by event. That's all we talked about the whole episode. So let's kick it off.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Although since the last episode, I have released a blog post that is about an event that only fish fans would understand. And
Or
high people would maybe think it's
interesting,
kind of cool and fucked up. But it's basically, so there is a connection certainly between the white paper being released on Halloween 10/31/08. And so I've written about connections with Bitcoin and fish. I'm the only person on earth that thinks this, but I still, you know, good luck convincing me otherwise. There's a big Halloween connection. Fish is known mostly for their Halloween tradition where they would do a cover album, like a costume set. And this started in 1994, 10/31, not with the white paper, but they covered the white album, the Beatles' white album, the first time they did this. So that's a little bit of an interesting connection. So what happened, the particular blog post I wrote was, Fish got so good at doing these covers that it was getting boring. So, you know, they covered these legendary albums.
Some would say that Fish is always boring. I'm just kidding.
Many would. Nobody would say that to my face.
Nobody would ever say that.
But
I've heard it.
They got so good, but even like to themselves and to their fans, the Halloween albums were getting like, it was like, oh great, they're just going to do another album. Oh, they just did Dark Side of the Moon 2 days after Velvet Underground. I mean, it just became kind of like average. And that changed a little bit when they came back from the post-Bitcoin hiatus, which was, they came back in 2009. And one of the things they did to alter things a little bit in 2012 was they didn't cover an album. They wrote a new album, didn't tell anybody about it, played it, and everybody was wondering, you know, what is this, right? So that was kind of a cool thing. So like they basically covered themselves, and that's like the best idea they can come up with after doing all these other albums. But that was still, it was very risky. And they started to get their mojo after this. And then they had another couple of Halloweens that were kind of interesting. I saw them in 2016. They did David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust. I mean, it was incredible. But still, everyone was like, yeah, I know, but we've been through the whole cover album thing. It's kind of old. So now we fast forward to 2018. And there was this big festival that they spent a year planning called Curveball. And it was going to be in Watkins Glen Raceway in New York. And they spent a year planning it. And they found out, basically, as cars were coming in, that the state of New York canceled it. Due to like some sewage or some type of rain event that caused, I don't know. At the time, we all believed like that it was dangerous because they said so, right? But it was like absolutely like heartbreaking. I mean, they put a lot of energy into these festivals, and just unbelievable to have it canceled. Okay,
By the way, it's the perfect name to have it canceled.
Curveball, and everyone said it was bad luck. Everybody said it was fucking bad luck. And the thing got canceled. And what ended up happening, they did have a Halloween show planned that year. And everybody's like, oh, are they going to do another boring album? You know, like, that's incredible, but our standards are so high. What they ended up doing was probably one of the best things they've ever done. And what they did was they invented a band, this Scandinavian band from the 80s called Kaspod Voxt. They created a backstory and they loaded the internet with like its existence so that if anybody were to Google them, they would think this was a real band from the 80s speaking in weird Scandinavian tones. And they pretended to cover this band and it was glorious and absolutely incredible.
They were the Scandinavian band?
They were them, yes. So they were them. They dressed up in white suits. And, you know, Trey played, actually, instead of playing his normal guitar, he played one of Eric Clapton's Strats because it was white and he wanted it to go with the decor. It's like literally the one show where he sounds different because of that. But it was incredible. I mean, this was like everybody who could not believe that they had stepped up, came up with a new idea, and blew us away yet again. There are songs in this, there are songs that were part of this album that I would say suggested very much, and I'm being dead serious when I tell you guys this, they suggested, I write in the paper that it could have been a Hal Finney communicating, using Phish as a vehicle, as some spirit might, to try to tell, to try to tell us, like, hey, this cryo thing actually worked. I'm actually here. I'm good.
Interesting.
There are lyrics, like, there's a song, one of the famous songs from this album called Famous. Famous, like, the 10 Phish fans love it. But it's called Say It To Me, Santos. And the song starts with the lyrics, my thoughts are frozen, like everyone else. That's how I start the essay. And
so many signs there. It feels like somebody's trying to capture your attention right there, sticking stuff like that into.
There's a song called We Have Come to Outlive Our Brains. And it's just really interesting. And I think if I'm right, it actually proves that Hal is not Satoshi, because Satoshi would have never.
Okay.
He has not tried to contact anybody.
That's good. Okay. All right.
He left and he's gone.
That's a wonderful point, too. That's a wonderful point.
But there are, there are spirits that are using Phish's signal to try to communicate with those of us in this realm.
All right. I like that theory. But I want to ask Business Cat, have you been Phish-pilled yet? Has he Phish-pilled you? How many stories of like this, these theories have you listened to? Have you bought in? If not,
we've had one episode. We did one episode outro with Phish, didn't we?
We did, like, because Business Cat decided to name his child after a very famous Phish song.
Okay.
And so I said, this has to be the outro song.
Okay.
Well, so the answer is no. I have not been Phish-pilled. I thoroughly enjoy watching you connect dots between Phish and Bitcoin. Like, as a person who enjoys connecting dots, like, all I do in the world is, like, I'm looking for signal as, like, anywhere I can find it. And when I find it, like, I mean, when you find signal, you can't dispute it. You know, like, when you find Bitcoin, you must tell the world about Bitcoin. When you find other things that are true, I mean, like, if you were the kind of person who radiates truth.
Okay.
James O'Keefe, do you guys know who James O'Keefe is?
Yeah.
James O'Keefe, the guy that was Veritas, now he's the CEO of OMG Media. So, like, he had a statement today that really was really profound to me. And I was like, if you have, like, can you be bought for $10 million? Like, $20 million? What is your price? If your price is not your life, then you can be bought. And so I think one of the things that all of us have identified about Bitcoin is, like, Bitcoin is a mountain worth dying on. We have finally found something that is true enough in the world that is worth each of us individually putting all of our life energy behind it. And so, having that realization that, oh, there are things in the world that are worth putting your life energy behind, that opens the door that, oh, there's other things, and, like, let your creativity be unleashed and go out in the world and look for signal. And when you find, like, if you are the kind of person who's going to spread things that are true, like, when you find signal, you're going to tell other people about it. And that's what comes through out of, like, the Phish fundamentals connection, is, like, it just spills out. Like, you are finding signal and spreading it with all of the friends.
Right. So,
Is Bitcoin and Phish on the same signal? Is this the one signal?
Yeah, that's the conversation I think we got to. I think it might have been Fundamentals episode. It wasn't one we missed, so it wasn't a cut conversation.
Yeah, we talked about it, but I don't think it's explicit per se, right? I don't think anybody actually knows what they're doing, right? Certainly nobody in Phish actually knows. Although, do you guys know that?
They just got on that rhythm.
Do you guys know that the songwriter, Trey's best friend and songwriter, his name is Tom Marshall. I've sort of, like, been attacking him on Twitter with these posts, right?
Yeah.
And at some point, he basically replied. He's like, "Oh, I'm totally into Bitcoin. Everything you said is true. I read it." Which, I don't know. Maybe it was
that's crazy.
Get your drug-addled tweets off my back.
Right. Yeah. He was like, all right, dude, chill. You're a super fan. But my question is,
you have enough data that like you are seeing all of these data points and realizing that you can fill in the gaps because you have done the work to accumulate all of this data on Fish and all like the writer and all of the band members. And that allows you, like, you saw that, like, oh yeah, this guy's a Bitcoiner and he comes back and verifies it. I mean, like,
and I want to like kind of make something clear too. I believe these stories are how we make it. There's a lyric from a Fish song called Mountains in the Mist, and it goes, here's the lyric. I'm not going to read the whole song, it's just this. It says, woven in the fairy tales we fabricate each day are little golden strands of truth that echo in the light. The colorful material we hold a certain way will keep us from the cold and help to get us through the night. So I just believe the stories we tell are right. Actually how we make it.
Right. So I think I DM'd you something. It was somebody asked about the future of Bitcoin. It was long enough ago that I don't remember the specifics, but somebody responded. It was like, well, we know because we're going to be the ones that take over and build everything. We're going to build all the solutions. We're going to be the ones that invest in everything. It's the Bitcoiners. We're going to eventually take the throne. Right. And I DM'd you. I said, that's the most based answer. Like, I know it's going to win because I'm going to make it win.
Right.
Like, that's like, you don't have to sit back and wonder like, oh man, I hope Bitcoin goes to the moon someday. I hope it becomes the reserve currency. It's like, well, you don't have to sit there and wonder. You could make that happen. That's what we're all trying to do, right? We're trying to make that happen. And, but that leads me back to, I asked Business Cat about being fish-pilled. So obviously fundamentals, autism before Bitcoin was fish. And that's how he expressed himself and just got, you know, into it. And then he connected the two. What's yours? Like, what's your outside Bitcoin? What are these rabbit holes like fish that are, you're so far deep down that you can't help but see the connections between the two? And you're like, oh shit, these are also on the same wavelength, same rhythm. They're all like same groove.
My fish. It's like, I mean, so he was into fish before Bitcoin. Like my fish, I think with the equivalent would be like space stuff. And
okay.
Like, I had like 1500 hours into Kerbal Space Program. Back when before I had a girlfriend. Yeah, I've put a lot of time into understanding the physics of where we are in the universe. And yeah, you've been on, you've seen some of the things I've been putting like out there on Twitter and in various Telegram chats. And yeah, like I've done enough work now that I can like, I have an understanding of, I think I have an understanding of the physics of what's going on. So whenever I'm enter a new data point that throws everything on its head is.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say that as much as you know about physics, space, whatever, probably more than most people, but you also make a lot of mentions to like these metaphysical things, the Akashic records, some of these like connections to old wisdom one would call religion or mythology. So it's like, what is it about getting so much information about what is real and then seeing how many holes there are in that story, how much of it that's you don't know is real? Like, you don't know. It's like the more volatility there is, like a correlation with volatility and faith. You see it even in Bitcoin Twitter, right? Like, the more volatile the asset, the more it's just like, I know it's going up. Like, your FUD doesn't fuck with me. You know what I mean? So it's like, you
right.
Kind of see this. It's almost like the black matter or the black gravity or whatever it's called, right? It's just like, what is this other thing? How do we explain
dark matter?
It? And you have to go
we
to
just
metaphysical.
Recently found out
yeah.
Dark matter doesn't exist.
Like, there you go. What does that
yeah.
even mean?
Dark. What does that mean?
So the fuck
is dark matter?
This is kind of a tangent. Dark matter, what we were taught growing up, what is that the equations that need to exist for the gravity of our galaxy to make sense.
Not really.
Like our galaxy is spinning at a certain, like all of our solar system is spinning around the supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy. But it's spinning much faster than it should be for the size of that supermassive black hole. So doing the math, what mass would it take to, like, what kind of
that's
hole
right.
in
there's not enough mass.
Space-time?
So the dark
there's
matter
no, there's
was
not
the
enough mass.
It doesn't explain it.
Yeah, it doesn't. What we can see does not explain
gotcha.
The gravity of what we're seeing in our galaxy alone.
Gotcha.
So like we are going around the galaxy too fast. We should be shooting off into away from our
right.
The amount of inertia we have should be shooting us away. If what we understand the mass of the supermassive black hole at the center of our galaxy, if it is, that's too small. So we have created this invention called this term called dark matter, which is just the variable that we use to shovel in all of these. Okay, we don't know what's going on here, so it's the dark. All of this missing mass is because there's dark matter out there in the universe, and that has been the answer to balancing the books of physics, Einsteinian physics, since the 60s and 70s. I'm not sure how long. Certainly my entire life. And recently, like in the past several weeks, there's now papers coming out, scientific papers coming out of. Like the scientists are finally getting to the point of like, okay, we can't make these equations balance. Why? Let's look for another answer. Maybe dark matter doesn't exist. And now, so that's where things are coming out. So now there's theories. People are putting out hypotheses and theories of these are ways that the universe could operate minus dark matter.
What would the implications be for our daily lives, right? So you're saying there's all this dark matter. And obviously, the planet not spinning off into oblivion or whatever affects us. But if there's this all this extra matter or forces in the universe, what are we interacting with, right, that we don't understand? How much of that affects us?
I mean, there's so much of the universe that impacts us day to day that we don't think about. But figuring out how do we sort out the signal from the noise and that and. In an era where, okay, we no longer can trust like the centralized authority figures who pass information down. Like we've been told from the people in the towers for 40 years that dark matter is the reason that don't worry about it. Dark matter is why. And now all the enter an era where nobody is trusting any centralized power sources of information anymore, and everybody's questioning how the hell do you make your way in the world? And this is a question that Bitcoiners are all answering. And for me. I find people that are trustworthy. Find people that self-correct. Find people that are subject matter experts in an area that you're not, and listen to what they have to say. And that has been pretty much my guiding principle. I find people that are worth listening to in areas and then listen. Who do they trust? Who do they find compelling? And then you can branch off of that. More work than just listening
right.
to somebody.
So it's kind of like what fundamentals you talked about recently. It's finding people who actually can be sovereign and provide value. If you provide value, fine, you want to be around other people, and you're probably going to pay more attention to what people who add value have to say and what their actions are.
I was going to say, but also, isn't it also true that the physics that we understand, only would explain a tree growing 30 some odd feet, but we know they grow much bigger than that. And it's there's a lot of these things where there's maybe cosmic forces that we don't think about, right? That no, it's just so much we don't understand. The Earth is not a closed system, right? We're very much impacted by astral outside forces. And also, your blood flow to your feet, and then that comes back up to the top of your body.
Yeah,
is not explained by our common physics.
Right. So it's it seems there's just so much that could be just. Maybe you would use the term in another dimension right now. I don't know, or another. It's at our fingertips that we just don't know how to unlock.
Yeah.
So much
by
energy.
By the way, you just reminded me. Business guy said the greatest thing. I actually had to go back and listen to it. We were doing our rip a couple of weeks ago, and he just said these words. He said, I was asking myself, what is my purpose in this current dimension? And it's just the deepest shit, you know? It's the way he thinks. You know what I mean?
What is that?
He thinks that's a normal question, and that's just, right? And it's
what does he mean by that? What do you mean by
I
dimension?
Think it was like, it was, I think he was literally talking through just what am I supposed to do here today? But the words were what is my actual purpose? And I remember thinking that I had to write this down. I want to make coffee cups that say this.
The universe does not make mistakes or there's no accidents. Horrible things happen for very precise reasons. And thinking that we can understand them is is egotistical, I think. But yeah, like day to day, like I'm here for a reason. And what is that reason? And like the like, why did all of us find Bitcoin before our brothers and sisters? Like, why? Like, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that there's something that each of us are going to do with the energy that we are putting aside for the future. And it's up to you. Like, what do you want it to be? Like, well, what do you want to do in this dimension? That's the question. Like, what are you here for?
So
are
like,
you here for you?
Yeah.
Are you here for something larger than you? Are you here? Yeah. I mean, so it's like, up to you.
It's like the prompt on Facebook or Twitter before you post something. It's like, what is happening on Twitter? I think Facebook is like, what's on your mind? But in your head, like before you post, you're thinking, what am I doing in my dimension?
Oh my, speaking of like you guys should look through my drafts. I have come up with my drafts on X.
You should publish a blog with just your drafts.
I'd have to do some editing. I think there's some stuff in there that there's some good reasons why I publish some stuff.
Let's use the GPT, see if we can maybe get some gold off of those drafts.
Finish it.
There was a period when you could use Grok and read other people's drafts. Yeah, there was some shenanigans on the back end. But yeah, I appreciate you. I think kind of normally. Yeah. This seems normal for me.
This conversation really brought up a ton of visuals for me. Really like zooming out of systems and the speed in which you experience the system of, let's say I'm here on Earth, and what I experience as a day, what it feels like, if you zoomed out of that system, I don't feel like I'm going that fast. But if you're revolving in space, and there's all these other things revolving in space going much faster, and you're looking at it from a much further distance, and you see that it's going much faster, it's so strange. Is this like relativity, where it's like the experience of the thing is, am I making any sense?
Here's an interesting thought.
Yeah, you're explaining
you're absolutely making sense. Okay, here's a next time you're driving in your car, here's a thing you can do to change the relativity of the situation. Instead of you driving over the planet is moving under your car. Your car is standing still, and you are moving the planet under you. Like, think, just see if you can wrap your mind or like get your mind into that situation while you're driving. That's fun to do. Think about an asteroid coming and smashing into the planet Earth. But think about it from the perspective that asteroid's standing still. The asteroid is not the thing that's moving. It's Earth that's coming and smashing into that asteroid. So we think of the Earth as this static thing because we're sitting on it. But it's not static.
So everything's moving at all times.
Yeah, even the little bits inside of us.
It's right. So it's just like systems that just look like each other across different sizes and act in different ways because of that.
How we comprehend time, how we grasp time, is dependent on how quickly you're moving through the medium of space-time. So you get going really fast, it's like your, how you interact with time changes.
And Mike, you'll appreciate this. All of that we just talked about is summed up in a very simple meme. E=mc².
Hell yeah.
By the way,
I do appreciate that.
Dark and we matter. Have like the fact that we are having this conversation right now is proof that the theory that relative, that time is relative, because like the GPS system didn't work until they factored in relativity why aren't these equations working? Oh, that's right. These satellites are moving fast enough and they have a precise enough clock that we need to factor this in, because the clock is not matching up with the clocks on Earth.
That's right.
I was going to say dark matter. Dark matter was also the name of like the company that Walter White got screwed out of.
Gray matter. Yeah.
It was gray matter. That's right. I was just watching Better Call Saul tonight.
They're almost in league with fish with me.
That whole deal. One of the things, like, obviously we've tried to do this podcast a few times, we've mentioned that, but I'm like constantly DMing Fundamentals with like all my crazy theories and shit. Like, he DMs me crazy stuff about fish, but it made me realize that one of the best things about the Bitcoin community, and we all got on that wavelength that we were talking about earlier, is that it's the best community of people to share your ideas with. Like, you're not going to, no matter who you share your ideas with, you're going to get the most honest, blunt, autistic feedback right away, tell you that it sucks or you're a scammer if it's a bad idea. If it's an okay idea, or you've got enough like reputation that people want to talk to you and listen to your ideas, they'll placate you a little bit, but they'll still give you, you know, polite feedback, tell you that you're wrong, or tell you where the holes are, tell you where your blind spots are. And it's really, I think that's a really undervalued quality, undervalued feature, is that you can kind of reach out to anybody, whether it's online, whether it's you find them in your community, whether you're in a foreign country and you just put out the signal, if you're on social media or something where you can get a hold of people in a new country, but you say you're a Bitcoiner and A, they'll listen to you and you can share your ideas and they will tell you right away. Like, if you tell you know, you can't trust a therapist, you can't even trust your own friends and family to give the honest truth sometimes. Most of the time, it's inconsequential, but boy, they'll tell you on Bitcoin Twitter what they think of your opinion.
Bitcoin is making all of us better teammates. It's like I'm thinking, like, you just kind of blew my mind there. Like, I had not thought about that from that perspective, that Bitcoin is up-leveling all of us to be able to, like, we all now have the confidence that each of us was right about Bitcoin, so we can be right in the, it's okay to stand up and put your opinion out there and be like, oh, hey, I don't like Teslas. Oh, yeah, I do. Okay, well, we both like Bitcoin, so that's all right.
Right.
It's so funny, man. I had my meetup tonight, and I was pretty psyched that I was going to have my meetup, and then I was going to come do this. And there was a newer guy came tonight, and just so unexpected, we ended up closing the place out, just kind of him and I talking for hours after everybody left. Just like, dude, there's always somebody who's super intense who just wants to go, you know?
We don't stop.
And, you know, I went out to Harrisburg over the weekend, and, you know, I'm in the car going home and my wife just wants to rest, and I'm just like, just not stopping. And that's the beauty, dude. There's always, you can find people that have the motor that are just always just a yes. Let's do this.
And while we're on that topic, I do want to encourage people, when you have, like me, really big, what you think are brilliant ideas, instead of like posting them publicly, send them, talking about them with somebody at the meetup, or DM them to Fundamentals and let them really put you down a peg. And you're like, all right, I got to iterate on this one a little bit before I put it out there.
There's a guy I recently met in the Philly meetup, and it's just like, some people are so surprising, but like, he talks very eloquently and he has these amazing, like really high-minded ideas. And I basically said to him, I'm like, you kind of should just have a podcast, because you need to round this shit out.
Right.
Right. This is like bar conversation is not ready for what you got. Right? You got to round it out.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Some people you feel bad for them, they're not connected. And it's not always Bitcoin either. Like, there can be a million different topics, but this is one we know best. It's like, if you're the biggest orange pill person in your community, you have nobody to talk to. You're trying to talk to guys at the bars, and it's hard to find somebody who can call your bullshit.
Talk about real shit. Yeah. It's brutal to be the only Bitcoiner in an area.
But that's part of why we appreciate it so much when we find each other.
That's true.
Yeah, right. And for that first time when you finally find like the Bitcoin crew, it's like, oh, the clouds part. It's like, oh, these are my people.
Because I'm going to hodl those people actually stronger.
It's also like,
They're the rarest.
It's like what we're living through right now is incredibly disheartening. What the feds are putting us through, like they're trying to break us. Because they want us to live in the pod and eat the bugs. They need to break us mentally to do that. So it's a lot. It's way harder. It's way easier to be nihilistic and depressed when you're not surrounded by Bitcoiners. Like once you take that step and get out of your house and go to that meetup and you find people, like, oh, there's like a resistance going on right now, and like it's okay. Like it's okay to stand up and say that, hey, pedophiles are creepy and bad.
That's true.
Maybe not. So just so we establish that.
We do not contain
We do not condone pedophiles.
There goes Bitbox.
Hell no.
The wood chipper is an excellent solution.
Oh, good. Guys, this... Can I steer us off a weird question?
Of course.
As always, unless someone has a thread of what we're going on right now.
Go for it, anyway. Mike.
Okay. So this concept of use... I know you guys have talked about this, too. The concept of using these terms autistic and retard in this space. And I'm curious about what you guys think about, like, the reworking of those words. They have such a negative sort of... Like, you're not allowed to touch those words.
You were called those a lot when you were growing up, so it's sensitive to you.
I was called one of those words, but I should have been called the other. But that other one didn't exist. I'll just plainly say autistic is a beautiful compliment.
Yes.
I'll just say it's a standard, right? Like, both of my children were diagnosed with autism, probably for not great reasons, but...
The reality is it's
totally overdiagnosed, and I feel like it's like Emperor Palpatine's plan to find Force sensitive younglings because they're the ones that are going to overthrow everything. They're the ones unaffected by narrative.
I was going to agree with that. My next point was going to be, and I think I tweeted this a while ago, but I didn't know how people would take it, but I'm like, this is like the age of the autistic person. Like, this is their time to shine. Like, this is the time for people
armor.
Who are blunt, honest, in the
face Elon Musk is the number one dude.
So, because they got the diagnosis they had, my kids were in like schools, they were in like programs with them. So we were like, just been around these kids growing up, and some are serious cases, but like, dude, they're all like rock stars. And like, I swear, like they're the ones that I'm going to, that they're the ones I want in my citadel.
Yeah. Right.
It's crazy.
I think that that's like there's a reason that they have really, disproportionately represented in the most valuable, highest growing like job, like the industry. They're huge in the tech industry. There are a lot of people in the AI industry. There's a lot of them in the finance industry. They are disproportionately represented in high skill, high success jobs. They are kind of almost, I don't want to say programmed, but it's like they're attuned to kind of see through the bullshit and just follow positive.
They're resistant.
Positive feedback, positive reinforcement, and to just follow that and avoid the nonsense.
They're resistant to it.
Right.
Now, the word retard, I'll just say that I think that it's weird that that word is what one they came for right before everything went like full retard.
Right. They didn't want you to be able to identify it.
Like, we weren't allowed to say it. And then so it just took so much longer to talk about what was happening when there was
Did you guys ever mentally stop using retard? Like, I don't think I've ever stopped mentally, like, that's retarded. Like,
I don't. I used to self-censor in polite company.
Yeah, like I wouldn't use it, but like thinking back, like my internal monologue, it's like, I mean, yeah, I always like,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Internally. I don't view the word retard as a prerogative or a pejorative. I don't view it as a negative.
As Michael Scott said in The Office, you don't call retarded people retards. You say it when your friends are being retarded.
That's right, like if you call your girlfriend a cunt, she's gonna be pissed off. If you call your buddy, your boyfriend a cunt, it's like, oh yeah, what's up, mate? You're a cunt. And it's like the same thing retarded. Like if I called my wife retarded, she would be upset about it. I mean, I guess it all depends on the body. Like, there's more to language than just the words, obviously. Yeah, if you're maliciously, angrily calling somebody a retard, yeah, you're a dick. You're using it and you're not using it in a proper, fun context.
You're just an asshole.
Yeah, and you don't call a person retarded, you call their idea or something they said or
true,
you know, a way of being, like you're being retarded.
Yeah. And as for autism, like forever, like since I was on the internet, it was obvious to me that being weird is a competitive advantage on the internet.
Oh yeah.
And autism, like, so now we're entering an era, they're trying to stamp all of us into these individual pods to make this lockstep to be like whatever. It's Keynesian economics. They Keynesian economics only works as long as nobody can jump shit. They imagine this. Everybody's always going to use the dollar, and that's how it will work. But and in the world where they're trying to destroy everybody with Keynesian economics, move us into the 30-minute, whatever the hell the 2030 agenda is that they're trying to get us to, they need people. Like, autism is a competitive advantage, just like being weird on the internet was. Like, you are all of a sudden, just by the nature of your existence, you are out competing those around you. Like, you're like not even, it's like you're able to, you're a tall person, so you can reach the tallest trees. It's like the giraffes, the tall giraffes outcompete the short giraffes.
Right.
Just by being tall.
And if you're not autistic, so you don't have a disadvantage, you just take Adderall.
To become autistic.
No, not just to compete with it, not to become.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
To do. I guess that really
to have the attributes of it, perhaps.
To get the benefits.
Adderall is an incredibly useful tool. It's like, absolutely, it's a useful tool.
To compete with autistic people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think, I don't think even, yeah, I mean, autistic people are dealing with the natural thing.
But it's like,
that's why I don't think Trump takes stimulants. I think he's just on the spectrum. I think he's just,
they're unstoppable. I mean, they're truly unstoppable humans.
Right.
Right. Like, look at how much they're pumping into Biden. He still can't, like, he still just couldn't even make through the State of the Union. Like,
that's abuse. Somebody should go to jail for
totally.
That.
Totally. This is like Dr. Mengele shit, what they're doing with Biden.
It is. It's,
what happened with Biden?
It's
what do you
very
mean, what
sad.
Happened
very
with Biden?
Sad.
Did you ever,
it's like they're doing the Pulp Fiction
you live under
adrenaline
a rock?
Thing into him every time they have to wake him up and get him out of his corp. Out of his,
they're shooting him up with
casket.
NAD and testosterone and
oh,
Adderall.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Yo, we have a literal zombie
Nads.
For president.
We have a zombie economy living off
That's
of cheap
right.
credit.
It goes down
we got
to
a
the
zombie president.
President. The leader of our country is a fucking zombie.
Yeah, you remember when it was like important?
It's a regency.
Like, oh my God, what do we do?
I know. It's yeah, exactly. It was like I used to care a lot, and it's nice not having to care so much anymore.
I'm just saying it reflects the entire body it governs.
Of
you
course,
know what I mean?
I mean
it's the
same, symptoms
it's
are
like
everywhere.
It's a feeding frenzy for a power vacuum for sure. I mean that. Is...
I mean, I think the they're propping up Biden. You've got like all these senators and congressmen who are not far off from him. Who's running the show? It's their aides. It's vultures. The institutions are being picked apart. The vultures are picking it apart. They know as well as we do. We're sitting here looking at the government. We're looking at these institutions. We're like, oh, you guys are finished. Either some of you will adapt, some of you will figure it out, but most of you are done. This is over. And the people inside of them know that too. They recognize it too. I mean, look at what happened at Harvard. Like just blatant, like the plagiarism is like, it's rotten through the core. Everybody inside that institution knows it, but they're stripping the assets and taking it down. They're taking the assets with them when this all crumbles. That's what they're doing. And we're choosing a new asset, I guess. That's just different perspective.
Do we all agree that there is like the public facing government and then there's the actual government? Or like the actual leader, not government, but the actual. Okay,
the ruler. There's an actual ruling class.
So,
are you talking about the deep state?
Yeah.
The deep state, the concept of the deep state. Like, not just like the unelected officials, but like the actual nefarious deep state.
The deep state is really just every, and this is my take on it. Deep state obviously exists, but it's just every person who looks the other way and blindly lets the people like blindly lets whoever the face of the government is, like, you know, the cops, the you know, the cabinet, the president, Congress, right? They do whatever they do, and all the people that are complicit with it, and they look the other way, they don't vote against it, they don't raise a fuss, they're just like, clean that shit up or take these other people down, they're my enemy, they hate Trump, right? So they're just like, they let the court system go completely awry outside of its norms, and they just kind of let that happen. And the deep state actors with inside that feed off that energy. They notice that like apathy. And that's where they operate in that black matter, right? You don't know who's doing it. You don't have a face most of the time. It doesn't, you know, it's not showing up on the website of who's elected, who's debating, who you're voting for. It's this energy, this mass that is builds up the core, the fabric of the state that's operating it day to day. It's nameless, faceless. We don't have accountability on them.
So are they incompetent or do they know
some,
it, or,
some
or
of
do
them
they
are.
Have a plan?
Some of them are.
I'm not of course some of them are, but like
I think my point is I don't think that they're working as like a monolithic singular unilateral group. It's a lot of factions, a lot of subsets within the state that are that are battling, and their incentives are aligned so that their outcome, the aggregate of the decisions and their actions is, you know, pretty evil right now. But I wouldn't say that that is a reflection of an individual or a small group or a hive mind. I think it's just the result of the incentives of the structure and the competing interests that kind of make up the micro version of that.
It raises the question, like, they all can't not have kids. Like, I understand why people who don't have children don't have souls, and they're just like, whatever, I'm just going to run this, and I'm just going to burn this engine out. Like it's sure. All about me.
Sure.
But like, some of these people, like some of the deep state, like, they actually have to have a vested interest in the future. So, like, sure. Again, it comes back to, like, what the hell are they doing? Like, why do we find ourselves
maybe they think that the way that they behave or the way that they act will result in them having
tomorrow,
a future for their family, not your family, their family.
Actually, I think that I think that people think that the future is insurmountable.
Is what?
Insurmountable.
Okay, sure.
And the reason I think that, so like, I have, you know, I have some friends that are pretty quote unquote wealthy in fiat, but like, you know, what it takes to get, like, what people think about in fiat in terms of like retiring is something like $15, $20 million in the bank and an investment vehicle that'll get them like a 15% yield so they can live modestly off of that. Okay. So like, this is like how these people think. If you're not like, that's retarded, right? And if you're not even one of these people, it's totally insurmountable. I mean, and
that's middle class, upper middle class now to have 15 right? million when you retire.
If that's the bar.
It's not rich.
If that's the bar, right? Future is absolutely insurmountable.
That's a cheeseburger.
How these people in the deep state, they're gunning for their number, probably.
Yeah.
But it's a uphill climb and probably never going to happen. And then, you know, it's just what kind of way of life is this?
If a government employee is trying to acquire capital to retire, that would immediately like separate them out of my concept of the deep state is.
Well, so some of them are,
the deep state is not retiring. The deep state
a lot of these people are not. I mean, there is a lot of people like Nancy Pelosi. She makes a lot of money. She acquires a lot of capital, but a lot of them are, they have really good salaries and they're expecting a federal pension. Like, they're not worried.
She is the face. She's not part. She's not the nefarious cloaked figure.
Somebody working at an office in Arlington.
Whatever their version of what their goal is insurmountable.
Right.
Right. I mean, and I do think it comes down to that. And that's where the nihilism comes from.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of inertia going against them. There's no incentive for them to put their neck out there for such a monumental problem that they're not going to solve it. They're incentivized. It's easier just to go along with what everybody else is doing and kind of virtue signal and kind of take virtue signaling as a sign of like how they should behave, what they should say, what they shouldn't say, things like that.
Do we have owners?
Right. Do we want owners? Do the majority of people
I think we have owners.
Yeah.
I do think the country has like some owners that we don't know who they are.
The board of directors.
Like, it's like, look at like the NFL, everybody knows who Roger Goodell is.
Yeah.
But like most football fans couldn't name 8 owners. And there's a reason.
Unless they say something racist, you know?
You know what I mean, though? But that's like by design. Like, Roger Goodell's there so that most of those owners, nobody ever knows their name.
Right.
You always have to have a front man.
Right. And I do think, yes, there's competing factions, and that's why things get very weird and we don't understand what the hell is actually going on.
And Jesse Ventura said, he's like, in front of the cameras, it's like WWF. In front of the cameras, everybody acts like they're enemies. Behind, when the cameras are off, everybody's friends. They're all just trying to manage this. They're being that face. They're representing their state. They're representing all the corporations and donors and people in the state. And that's just the legislative level.
You ever listen to Tom Luongo?
I know who that is, but
he has some pretty good podcasts. He does a really good job of actually explaining, I will say, who some of these factions are, what they're competing about. And he'll say, well, we got Davos going, and you have, you know, like you might even have like Jamie Dimon and Jerome Powell
right,
in a different camp. And somehow, you know, Jamie Dimon will tolerate Bitcoin because, you know, he wants to, you know, they're fighting a different battle.
Right, exactly. To go back to something you said, Business Cat, you mentioned something about that they can't all not have kids. And that made me think about a lot of people, and this is going to be controversial if you really like Saylor. I do think that Saylor is, I think he is trying to do what we would consider the Chad thing or like the smart thing. I don't know what uphill battles he'll face, but my point is looking at somebody like Saylor and what he's doing, how he doesn't seem to have a ton of, like, the state's not clamping down on Saylor like they are Elon Musk or Donald Trump or just anybody who's like Elon Musk is upsetting the freedom of speech, the censorship, industrial complex, whatever you want to call it. But Saylor's seemingly disrupting finance, the US dollar as its biggest competitor, as many might see it, but they're not coming after him. But
He's not CIA, they're gonna.
My question is, he doesn't have kids. He doesn't have a family. What is, does that change how you look at Saylor? Like, what's he?
100%.
What's he doing?
Yes.
What's he building this huge treasure pot, this wealth? What's he fighting for if he doesn't? His legacy doesn't live on past him. Or is this his legacy?
This is his legacy.
That is his legacy.
I suspect that he is a nihilist.
He needs
chasing, like running from annihilation. Like I don't think he is. Yeah, I really doubt that he is super concerned with his immortal soul. I mean, he's worried about building a castle, like a castle for men dimension for men.
You guys want to hear something crazy? Yeah, I recently came across his PhD thesis.
He was at DuPont, right?
And it's a But it's his PhD. It was just so unexpected. Like, I thought he was just like some aerospace engineer, right?
Uh-huh.
And that he did something like wrote some 150-page thesis on that. His thesis is called A Machiavellian Interpretation of Political Dynamics. So, like,
the ends justify the means.
But he's been thinking about this, and he's been thinking about this for a long, long time.
Yeah, so why did it take him so long to figure out Bitcoin?
Well, I have a theory. My theory is to go back to the fact that he doesn't have a family, right? And you know about midlife crisis. You talked about midlife crisis. He's been through his midlife crisis. He's got a new crisis that he's in, or he's got some extension of whatever a rich, successful man probably crisis they have if they don't have a family at his age and as much wealth and as many excuses as many excuses as he has. Like, he has no reason to not have all those things. So what's his legacy? And I've talked about on the show before that history is won by, you know, written by the victors. We talked about it. We're going to write our own history. Well, when you look back, if you don't have a family, your legacy, where are you going to find the legacy? On the blockchain. If you are significant enough in your activity using Bitcoin, however you choose to interact with the real world, with the earth, with the economy, with the culture of the time, you will leave a impression on the time chain. People will look back and be like, those were Saylor's coins. That was Michael Saylor. That was the guy that kicked this thing into the next gear before the ETFs. This huge wallet is his. Maybe that's what he's doing. He's leaving that timeless imprint on the blockchain.
I mean, whether or not he is like CIA, I do think he thinks he's found something that has fascinated him as, you know, like as a man of science. He's found something unique, and it's just, he is all in. Now the question, does he get to be all in and does he get to this free ride because, you know, he's getting help? But,
right.
I mean, it is still interesting.
It's also harder to exploit and extort a man with no family.
Yeah, this is true. If I had to bet, I'm gonna guess he's not a Fed. Sure, I'm sure he has like federal contacts. Like, there's people like.
Well, we gotta define. Let's define. What does a Fed mean? Does a Fed mean you're literally on payroll, or does that mean you're just acting in the interests of somebody who
would be on the federal payroll? What's the line like?
I would say it's acting in the interests. Like
your agenda is compromised. Yeah. Your agenda is compromised by federal interests.
No, it's like working. So like everything I do is to build my family, like is to propagate my family through eternity. And so one of the issues, like I can only judge myself against myself. And I remember what my mindset was before I had children. And it's like, oh, like whether or not like I would have admitted at the time, my entire worldview was focused on myself and the here and now. How do I put myself in a position to succeed, be better than I was before? And that had to change. And so now looking at Michael Saylor, like, okay, so he doesn't have kids. What is he doing? Like he is trying to, like, whatever he's building he's building the largest target for the state to come after. So like when Executive Order 6102 comes for Bitcoin, he is the largest target. Him and BlackRock are the largest target. Like they're going to come take those stacks. So there's no way he hasn't considered that the state's just going to come yoink and this is all mine now. So what's he doing? Like, I think he's trying to save the country in a way that others can't. That's just his personal goal, or like a task.
It's his hero's journey.
Yeah, it's his hero's journey. It's like it's a yoke that only Michael Saylor could pull. Like none of us are up to that task. But
do you think that if he could have the appreciation and wealth in Bitcoin, that he cares if that also includes saving the country, so to speak? Or do you think that it's more of, if the country is fucked? Well, that's where it gets to your point about the 6102. If the country's fucked, that's the kind of situation where they 6102, or they start seizing and just robbing people. But if the country continues to grow and be relatively successful and we maintain peace, it's more likely that the rule of law will protect most, if not all, of his coins. Maybe they come with him pretty hard with taxes, but they don't directly seize his keys and take his coins, right? Maybe that's right. Maybe his incentive is to make sure both succeed.
Now that I think about it, I should also be more gracious with him. I think from the what I understand of like the things I've listened to him say, I think he's not trying to save our country. He's trying to save the species. He sees the issues at a species level and is attempting to do good for the species.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
it's like
he's accumulating as much Bitcoin as he can, and then he says this, and he doesn't have any heirs, and he's going to die with it. That's what he says. I'm going to die with
like a sacrifice.
He could die right now. I mean, I think this is actually a big risk that he now has a mortality risk that's like associated with Bitcoin.
Do we all know that? Like there's an address tied with Michael Saylor.
I don't know where he keeps his keys.
I mean, he's got his own private stash, but the vast majority of it is. I mean, you could say that because he's the top shareholder, that it's his personal stash at MicroStrategy as well. But the point is, once he dies,
if he were to die right now,
the shareholders figure in
it would all get liquidated.
Well, apparently, right. Orangeville is his board.
Understand, but like, I think the entire MicroStrategy experiment it's a matter of time. Basically, you know, he is the champion.
So, what people fear may happen to Berkshire Hathaway when Warren Buffett dies will definitely happen when, when Saylor dies. He's built a way less sturdy foundation
without an heir to carry it on. But I guess he knows this.
I'm going to guess that he is one of those people that's fascinated with life extension. Just looking at his body, like what he looked like 20 years ago versus what he looks like now.
Well,
like,
also,
he is taking care of himself.
Here's the thing, though. Maybe all these convertible notes and all this debt he is saddling MicroStrategy up with, if he dies and they think about liquidating, it's like the only chance we have of paying this debt back is to keep it. We don't have a choice. We can't sell this because we don't have another way.
MicroStrategy has no exit strategy.
Right.
They are committed.
Right.
They are. You know what it seems like, too? Like, all of the creative offerings, you know, they clearly suggest he doesn't care about losing equity 5 years from now, right? He cares about getting as much corn today as he can. And it's almost as though, it's almost like in a scientific way, he believes he has to drain the exchanges to the extent possible. And he'll go, he'll pretty much do whatever it takes to do that. Like that he can't, like this, it's almost like a proof concept. Like he needs to try to drain liquidity off the exchanges. I wonder if MicroStrategy only buys from the exchanges, right?
Right. I mean, yeah. It seems like that's, I think there was 2 weekends ago when Bitcoin was just marching up to like 74 almost. Somebody was time weighted average buying just all weekend long on Coinbase. And it was, you could just watch it on the charts. And then on Monday or Tuesday, it's like he comes out and they're like, all right, we finished buying it. And it's like, all right, there was definitely signs of Saylor there.
Yeah. I mean, nobody prices in that Saylor's, they know he's buying. And yet everybody thinks the halving's priced. Everybody thinks all these things are priced in. Like people, you watch Saylor buy these coins and it's
you,
not
you would know
being
this
in.
Better than me. I'm just speculating based on my ADIQ, but I was seeing the prices that his previous notes, his convertibles were trading at, and they were just trading way above par, or I don't know if that's the right term, but they were trading at a huge premium. And then I was reading and listening to them talk about who's buying those notes, and it sounds like it's like insurers and reinsurers, because they're technically buying debt, and they, if they can get it in their GP or their general account, then, because somebody asked the question, what are these people, why are they buying these at such low interest rates, like do they just get cash back at the end, like they don't get much of the upside of Bitcoin, they're just getting shares or cash. And I'm like, I don't think they care. I think as long as they can increase the size of their general account, they can keep taking on more premiums and they can keep growing the company. And if they can have assets that can be this trade at this premium for X amount of time, they can just use all that time to keep growing their institution.
It's probably true. I don't know how many insurance companies can buy a CCC rated debt.
Sure.
But they would probably be the ones that are backed by big private equity, and so, and we do have a lot of those. So that's like, you know, in 2008 when the insurance companies basically just bought all that shit, right? That's all there was, right? Were these public insurance companies?
Right.
Now we have insurance again. We have the nameless, faceless ones you don't know about.
That makes me think like back when in The Big Short, right? 2008, they were packaging all of these shitty loans or these lower rated loans into these mortgage-backed securities and giving them a AAA rating because they were considered safe, right? Like they were just, nobody thought about any risk there. Well, what if all of Michael Saylor's debt is just getting packaged up into CLOs, which is doing kind of the same thing. They just throw a bunch of B, A, C, you know, and by the when you take it all and average it down, it's like, oh, Moody's gives us a AAA. If you look online, right, like there's nobody's worried about AAA CLOs, CLO debt. Right, it's like they're like it's not the same as mortgage back or excuse me, CDOs
yeah.
back in.
But I think they're backstop. Like these, the companies that are buying this are backstop by Apollo,
sure,
and KKR.
Okay,
you know, they're not the ones that are going to get, you know, bailed out by either by bank or by government. Yeah.
We're getting kind of late here, but I just wanted to ask on this topic, what is your vantage point in the industry? I know people aren't really, doesn't sound like too many people are talking about it yet, but some are, and you're kind of seeing the changes and you're kind of seeing how TradFi is interacting with this new product. And people, it seems like people are surprised. The inflows are insane. I mean, the outflows from GBTC are just getting scooped right up, and the demand does not seem to be waning. So what's your perspective here?
I think it's really interesting. I think a lot of people are talking more about Bitcoin in TradFi. You know, I love the meme of the guy with the vest and the coffee who's like, you know, I just found out about Bitcoin, but I know more than you about it. I mean, these are the, I was in a conversation today with my boss and I didn't think I was going to talk about it tonight, but I was like, this could get, every time I talk to them about Bitcoin, it's going to become a story because like the insanity of what is in the common knowledge is it's just incredible. I mean,
can you give us a little taste?
Yeah. So like, here's a couple of things. Like one day he'll be like, yeah, totally get it. That makes a lot of sense, right? And then like the next day, it'll be like, but it doesn't earn interest. So what? Why does anybody want it, right? Today, it was more like, well, how is the halving not priced in? Everything's priced in. And like, this is honestly a smart guy who actually knows more about traditional financial markets than any of us, okay? You know, if you're trading S&P or interest rate markets, I mean, it's the person who knows more about it than most people. However, you know, in the Bitcoin market, it's like, you know, the interest rate swap market can price something in because all the capital in the world is there, right? All the capital in the world is in the S&P. It can price something in that it thinks, right? All the capital in the world is not in Bitcoin, right? So,
right, yeah, Bitcoin's not even big enough yet for a company like Apple to use it.
It's insane. It's just insane to think that that market can price in something. The capital is not there, right? It's coming.
Do you think your boss is going to figure that out?
Never.
What do you think the FOMO is going to be like this cycle? It just feels everybody... Because everybody feels like this is going to be different, this is going to be crazy, it'll probably be a disappointment, but either way, bullish case. Like, what do you think?
Hey, last cycle was not a disappointment, so I don't think this one will be a disappointment.
It's going to be crazy. The FOMO is going to get crazy, especially like once we cross like 100K and people realize.
I think that's like the turning point, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just going to click in people's minds.
I will go out on a limb and say, I think there's a real chance we're going to hit seven figures, like the $1 million this cycle. Like, it's not going to stay there.
I was going to say, maybe for an hour.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when we hit it hitting 69,420 before, it's like it was there for briefly, and now it's boring. It's like seeing the kind of like signal that's coming out of like on Twitter right now of shitcoiners that are coming out of the woodwork and being like, eh, shit's awesome. It's like we're not even to the halving yet. Like, this is nothing.
Well, yeah, and the way I would say the ETF demand, for whatever that's it's worth, it's a drop in the ocean. What we have right now is an absolute drop in the ocean, right?
The amount of wealth that's actually out there that can come into that space.
Of like what wants to go in right now.
The spigots haven't opened.
And of that little drop in the ocean, like the retards at Coinbase can't even handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes
as it is.
It's like right now the people buying the ETF, it's like the early beta testers. Like the financial advisor platforms haven't turned on. The Swiss bank hasn't turned on to start buying yet. Or maybe it is foreigns that are buying it. But there's just so much. The other ETFs haven't started buying it yet.
We drained GBTC in like 6 weeks.
Right.
And we managed to price increase from 42 to like 66 where it is now, right? And now it's in six weeks.
What would there have been a different outcome in terms of price and like maybe the stunted price rise, or maybe it doesn't, maybe it made it worse. If they didn't have the you could do in-kind transfers if you didn't have to do the cash creates.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. But I guess the point was, another 6 weeks, GBTC could be gone. And then we'll have the halving. We will start to, more of that demand will start to come in. And then the big move is going to be when rates drop. Who knows when that'll be? Yeah, maybe.
Right.
Maybe not for another year. Who knows? Right. But that's going to be when the capital comes. Right.
I think like the longer everybody who's in Bitcoin, like the longer eventually you come to a point where you start to seriously consider just disappearing, just vanishing into the shrubbery. And I think that this cycle is going to be significant enough that newbies, new coiners who enter this cycle and have like a couple million sats are going to have that moment this cycle before even like the drawdown comes. It's like that's how much it's going to be it's going to change. I mean, right now it's going to change the social layer of Bitcoin, because the OGs are already kind of like they don't participate as much as they used to. And if Bitcoin really starts pumping, like, are Bitcoiners who are holding coins really going to go to a meetup where they could get, like, bagged and tagged. I mean, there's all of these new threat models that start open. And like, once the meetups start falling apart, then like, where do newbies go to learn? Like, it's going to get awkward. You're going to have to like know somebody.
You're going to have to take a quiz on Coinbase Earn to get 21 cents.
At that point, Coinbase, there's not going to be no coins on Coinbase. Like, right. You're going to want to go to an app to buy coins. There's going to be no app that has coins to sell you for dollars. I don't know. That seems likely to happen. Especially with Sailor hoovering up coins, with the ETFs hoovering up coins. With I'm not selling any of the coins I'm mining. So yeah, they're.
I almost wonder if there's a risk that we wake. I mean, this would be great for some people. I don't think anybody would really complain about it until they thought about it a little bit more. But I think that there's a risk at some point we wake up and the United States and central banks around the world have decided they're gonna try to just say, hey, we're repricing Bitcoin. It's now $400,000. This is what we're taking. This is what the central bank will buy it for, whatever, yada, yada. I don't know, something like that. I don't know if it'll work for them, but I almost wonder if it's just like, all right, if we raise it up to the certain point, now we have enough liquidity. Now these pension funds, these sovereign wealth funds, these sovereigns can start getting into this without just having crazy price dislocations all over the place. I don't know.
That would be the ultimate, like if gold was 6102, but Bitcoin gets 400,000.
Yeah, right.
Like that would be the
executive
ultimate.
Order 69420 or 49 or 42069.
Yeah, right. Though, but wouldn't that be like the ultimate capitulation?
Yeah, it's like every. But then one of the markers.
But then I would be like, that would cause me to be like, the only reason they do something like that is because they knew this thing was going to spike way higher and they were getting ahead of it.
Oh yeah, be like, why so bearish, you Fed fox?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But when tyrannical governments take over markets, like one of the things that, like one of the checkboxes they go on the road to debasement is price controls. The second that a state sets this is the price for this object, you immediately create a black market for that object. So if they came out and said, okay, Bitcoin, the exchange rate for Bitcoin is 400,000 sats per dollar or whatever.
Somebody'd arb it.
But that's backwards. Somebody would arb it immediately. Like, how do you arbitrage? Like, you tell it, it breaks everything. Like, they can't, yeah.
Tether
it's
would
just
be
like
busy.
Punching. Yeah, Tether would be busy. It's like shooting holes in the bottom of your bow with a shotgun.
Yeah, we would figure out quickly how to basically tell them to fuck off. They don't set prices. I mean, the opportunity for them to do that was before there were spot ETFs, you know, before so many people had their own keys and ran nodes. You know what I mean? There was an opportunity probably to co-opt Bitcoin in that way, co-opt the price. I think it just gets harder and harder, right? It gets harder and harder for them to do something like that.
For sure. And hopefully everything gets harder and harder for them to do as the price goes up.
Yeah, I think so.
Guys, we have to get to your podcast.
Okey-dokey. We do have a podcast. We occasionally release episodes.
I don't want to leave without you guys mentioning your podcast and the new developments around that.
Well, that's very kind of you. We release episodes every 2 weeks on Thursdays currently. That is the cadence that has worked out for my schedule.
Can you repeat the name and where to find you?
We eagerly await the Thursday morning release of Rock Paper Bitcoin.
I'm always looking forward to that release, by the way. Every Thursday morning, I'm listening to you guys because I have a drive. I have a morning drive and I'm like, oh, a new episode drop. I'm going to grab this one because you guys do it bi-weekly, right?
Bi-weekly. I appreciate that too. And I'll tell you, like, I feel like I know there's like five or six people that start listening right as we drop it. And
right.
I can't wait either because I forget everything we talked about and I feel like I'm listening to it with those guys.
Oh yeah, we're down to like, it's going to be August before this airs because we got such a backlog, but I forget everything when they come out.
If you're not familiar with our show, I mean, it's called Rock Paper Bitcoin, but we just talk about our lives, fundamentals, and the tagline is, we're two plebs from Pennsylvania trying to find signal in a noisy world. So, I mean, we talk about our lives. I mean, often we don't talk about Bitcoin. So if that sounds interesting, we're on season one right now. We're still kind of talking a lot about Bitcoin. I'm kind of leading into another topic that we're that's going to consume me for a while.
So you're branching out.
Yeah, I have come across a some interesting stuff that I'm still researching. That is definitely going to be a lot of content, a lot of conversations around it.
Can you give us any hints?
I cannot wait for this.
I've been sitting here playing with this compass. I don't know if you've noticed. So let me ask you that. This is your teaser.
You're going to do compass mining?
If you have a compass, you open up a compass and look at it. Where does the compass point?
North.
Towards the magnetic North Pole, yes?
Yeah, there you go.
We would assume, that's the point of the compass, right? Isn't it?
So one of the things that this is your teaser, folks. The magnetic North Pole is not one magnetic North Pole. There's three magnetic North Poles. And we do a weighted average of the three of them to find what we call the magnetic North Pole. It was first surveyed in the early 1800s. It was at the south end of Prince of Wales Island. It was then, the next time it was surveyed was almost 100 years later. And it was at the north end of Prince Wales Island. So it is moving. And since then, it has accelerated and is moving much faster and is speeding up every day. It's now past the North Pole and it's on its way down towards Siberia. And,
The magnetic field is moving. Is Earth rotating?
I wonder how much hash rate has to do with this.
Yeah. What I'm talking about is the magnetic reversal, which is established science. I mean, in the geological record, any rock that has iron in it, you can tell the orientation of the planet's magnetic field from the iron in the rock. So like you can go back hundreds of thousands of years and find where was magnetic north at this point. And one of the things that we've established, like there's been hundreds of thousands of magnetic reversals over the century, the eons that this planet's been spinning through the space. So yeah, it's at what we think of as the North Pole, the North Magnetic Pole, that's going to switch with the South one, and then it's going to switch back.
Is this like Mercury in retrograde? Like, am I going to be sad when it's reversing and everything's going to go back
most
to normal?
Most likely. We got to get Jack Cruz to talk about this.
So Mercury in retrograde is a observer phenomenon.
Okay.
The short answer is yes. I can't say empirically yes. This is getting into Akashic Records level stuff. There's tons of animals on this planet that can feel and sense magnetic fields. And I would suspect that humans are one of those. And yeah, this is a fact.
I'm interested. You do. I'm going to have to tune in to listen more about this because I kind of know what you're talking about.
This is an absolute rock, paper, Bitcoin topic. You got the rock, geological rock. You've got the paper, which is, let's just take a weighted average and tell everybody that's north and see if they believe us. And then there's this true north, right?
We have Bitcoin.
It's the Bitcoin, idea, the metaphysical idea, but there is a true north. It's very real.
If you can use a compass to navigate and get where you're needing to go, I think, does trusting matter, right? Like if you use your compass and it gets you where you need to go, it's like, do you have to ask too many questions about who's telling you what's north?
How do you know you got to where you needed to go?
That's a good question too. All right, how this you is going to get back to your Twitter, north, your Twitter post where you just keep asking.
Well, anyway, so that's my teaser. There's more to it than just a magnetic reversal. There's a geological component, and it's a long, long conversation.
That sounds awesome.
I don't know. Yeah, my question is like I ask God, like, why did you pick me for Bitcoin? Like, what am I doing with this Bitcoin? And I'm getting the feeling that where we're going with this reversal is like, oh, this is why I have Bitcoin.
Something to think about.
That is the greatest tease ever.
Well said. Gentlemen, do you have anything that you wanted to speak about that we haven't talked about tonight?
Keep your eyes open. Hug your family.
I'm going to dampen it up a little bit, reiterate something I've been harping on, which is you're not sovereign unless you actually add value, because actually nobody cares if you live or die unless you add value. And so you're only sovereign if people want to keep you sovereign.
That's true. That's dark.
I thought it was dark, but now I'm thinking it's, you know, it's really just a deep way of saying take personal responsibility for your shit.
Yeah, like I just feel like we think that a stack of Bitcoin or, you know, a gun is going to keep us free, right? But like the real insight is adding value to people, making people want you to be alive.
For sure. Because I agree with that.
They get to eat delicious food or whatever it is you provide.
Part of growing up is realizing that nobody's coming to save us and we have to save ourselves.
But sovereignty is available to those who make themselves valuable to others.
There you have it.
That, man, that was a banger. I enjoyed that conversation thoroughly. There was a lot of great, all of these like different visuals came up throughout the place. And I always want to like stop you guys and be like, all right, check this out. This is what I'm seeing in my Midjourney image that I'm generating as you guys are talking, you know, but
how,
I can never.
How was how'd you do with the kid? Did you have to run out and take care of the kid at all?
That's right. I was on daddy duty tonight. So I did, everything was good. I'm checking, you know, making sure that he's still sleeping. Everything was
good. That's the whole thing. Good dad.
This has high potential to make it. This one's going to make it.
Oh, hey, it says 99% uploaded on my screen. I haven't screwed it up yet.
Nailed it.
We are going to make it.
Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked ADIQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!